Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio, our very special WrestleMania Backlash pre-show edition of WrestleChat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing tonight's big WrestleMania Backlash event at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, before we get started, obviously the sad news this week is that ECW original New Jack is dead at age 58 of a heart attack in North Carolina. Now, if you're a regular listener to this show, you know that I was a big New Jack fan. I was a big ECW fan, and I met New Jack on many occasions. And he was always a very nice person, despite what other people will tell you, despite his image, despite whatever. And I thought we would start today's show, and I'd give you a little bit of a story about myself and New Jack that his fans might enjoy. He had been up here doing a show pretty locally to me. And that night he wanted to stay over because he did not want to drive to Deer Park, Long Island, with the person he was designated to drive with, because he felt that person was inebriated or otherwise impaired. And he said, I don't want to drive with him, but I have no way to Deer Park, Long Island tomorrow, so I don't really have a whole lot of choice. And I told him, if you want to stay the night in this town at a hotel or something, I'll drive you in the morning. I'll just come pick you up at whatever hotel you're staying in. Now, a friend of mine who knew him kind of recommended me, because he said, well, I can't trust that you're just going to do this, and I don't know you that well. At the time, he didn't. And my friend vouched for me and said, no, if he says he's going to be there, he'll be there. So he said, okay, well, then that's what we'll do. I'm going to stay the night over here. That night, as I'm leaving the arena, we had decided we're all going to go have some dinner. And I was heading to my car out through the parking lot to wait for him when a car sped through the parking lot and missed a girl probably about 16 or 17 years of age by probably a fraction of an inch. And the guy she was with, who turned out to be her brother, screamed at the guy in the car, slow down, you idiot. And the brakes hit. And out of the car comes these two wrestlers who were working security for ECW at the time. They're local wrestlers. I recognize one. I don't recognize the other. The other comes up to me and says, what did you just say to me? I said, I didn't say anything to you, but I'll repeat it. You're an idiot. Whoever was driving that car is an idiot because you almost hit that girl. This guy says to me, oh, how many guys do you have? I said, what do you mean, how many guys do I have? He said, how many guys do you have to take me on? I said, well, if we're going to fight, it's just going to be you and me. I don't need any guys to take you on. Well, just about as we're coming to blows, I hear New Jack coming through what has now become a little bit of a crowd saying, Jesus Christ, are they causing trouble again? Wait till I get my hands on somebody. That's it. These guys were in the car and gone in 10 seconds flat. And without even thinking twice, he says to me, every place that we have used these guys for security, these two have caused trouble. I've had just about enough of it. If they want to be wrestlers, let them get in the ring with me for 10 seconds. They won't want to be a wrestler ever again. Ever. So I thought it was kind of funny. We laughed about it afterwards, and he said at first, well, you know what, I'd rather just go out to a club. Is there a club around here where, you know, maybe there's some music, dancing, whatever? I said, yeah, so we take him to a club. We were there maybe 15 minutes, and he said he didn't like it, and he'd rather just go get dinner. So we went to a local diner that was a 24-hour diner, and he clearly says to the waitress, is it possible that I can get a salad, and then I know you have this fried fish dish here, but can I get it boiled or something? She says yes to the fish, but then she says, well, we can't make you a salad because salad bar is closed this late. We don't keep it open. He said, well, but you just can't make me a salad. You must have the ingredients. I mean, can you just make me a salad? And she says, no, flat out, no, we can't make you a salad. So we joked about that for a little bit. And what did he get? He got a fried fish dish. And he says to her, ma'am, I clearly told you that I do not eat fried food, especially this late. And I'm not eating it. You're going to have to take it back. So we shared some stories and laughed a little bit about that. And sure enough, he went on his merry way. And 8 o'clock that morning, because they had a afternoon show, I was headed to Deer Park, Long Island, with New Jack. And we actually had some fun. We were exchanging stories, and we were talking about the night before. He told me a lot of how he got into the business and some stories about people in the business, which I will not relate. But my best memory, and the one that I take with me the most, is that probably two-thirds of the way down there, we spotted a rest stop that had a Dunkin' Donuts Baskin-Robbins combination, and he said, pull in there, I want to get ice cream. So we pulled in, and he orders a small dish of vanilla. Now, there's only one person working both Baskin-Robbins and, because it's like a shared counter, Baskin-Robbins and Dunkin' Donuts, one person working that cash register for both. And I said, I'll have a chocolate milkshake. He gets his vanilla. He's sitting down. He's eating it. Probably 3 minutes goes by, and he says, did you not order something? I said, yeah, I ordered a vanilla shake or a chocolate shake. I said, well, where the hell is it? So I ask, is my shake coming? And the girl behind the counter says, I don't know how to make one. I said, well, could you find somebody who might? So she goes and apparently gets some guy in the back. This guy in the back comes out and says, okay, you wanted a chocolate shake. I said, yes, okay. A minute goes by, and this guy approaches our table, and he says to me, excuse me, what kind of ice cream would you like in that chocolate shake? And New Jack just loses it. He says, Jesus Christ, chocolate ice cream. What the hell other kind of ice cream would you consider putting in a chocolate shake? What the hell is wrong with you? And this guy looks like he has peed his pants. Runs back behind the counter, and in a few minutes, I had one of the worst chocolate shakes I ever had in my life because obviously nobody knew how to make one. But just his reaction was priceless, and I got to see how other people reacted to New Jack, and it was very funny because sometimes the image he presented to the general public and the way he was, I hear a lot of people saying New Jack was New Jack. The guy you saw was really him. I'm going to be the guy who says that's not really true. Because the guy I saw was funny. He was witty. He was very, very easy to laugh, easy to tell a funny story. He was totally at ease driving down with me. I had no issues with him. He had no issues with me. And we just had fun. And I thought to myself, it's very different, really, than most people would imagine. When I told people I was driving New Jack to Deer Park, Long Island, I got a lot of weird looks. You sure you want to do that? You sure this is a good idea? One of the best experiences I had in able to chat with a wrestler for probably 3 hours or so on our trip, and one that I'll remember for a long time. Despite the fact that who you saw was sometimes extraordinarily violent guy and a guy who had a really quick temper, no doubt about that, and a guy who some people will say injured people recklessly and did some things, and he may have done all those things. But I'm here to tell you that the new Jack I drove to Deer Park, Long Island, was a hell of a cool guy, really nice person, and someone I enjoyed their company very, very much. And I do think that in this age of wrestling being so politically correct and a new era of fans saying, oh my goodness, if you do anything that could possibly even remotely hurt, if it goes wrong, you shouldn't even do it. New Jack was one of those guys who said, if you're going to be a wrestler, you're going to take your lumps. That's just the way it's going to be. And I miss that. And I definitely, I do think the wrestling world's going to miss New Jack, because as much as he might have been controversial, he loved that controversy. He loved being that guy who said the thing that you were aghast about, who did the thing that everybody's talking about. He loved being that guy. But if you caught him in a private moment where there was no camera, there was nothing to be gained by it, and you just engaged him in conversation, really, really, really nice guy. Mike, those days, I guess, are gone of, you know, the hardcore stuff to an extent. And I think he's one of the purveyors of that, one of the guys that represented that the most.
I mean, look, him and the Sandman and guys like that, you could never have, I don't think you could have, I mean, I guess if you did it right, you could have somebody like that. But the WWE isn't going to do that. That's not PG. That character he portrayed is not a PG character. All right? And so you're not going to get that. And look, one of the best, he's a nice guy. When ECW eventually came to Louisiana, right, they ended up coming to Baton Rouge. And I went to the show, and, you know, Sandman, all these other guys, and New Jack was there, all right? And so New Jack comes on the mic before his match now. This is before his match. And he says, anybody who wants to come out with me after the match can come. Now, I couldn't, if I wanted to do it, I couldn't have done it because I had somebody that brought me that night. I rode with somebody, and I didn't want to leave that person in the lurch. So, but apparently there were people that left with him that went out to party with him or went out to eat with him or something like that, you know. And that was just New Jack, from what I understand, you know. So, and look, one of the best promos I've ever seen was that promo when New Jack was in, I believe, Harlem or something, and he said, I'm not going to go to WCW. I'm not going to go there. I'm ECW. I'm going to die in ECW, and I'm going to retire in ECW. I mean, that was a hell of a promo.
Yeah, and you know, again, if you delve into your New Jack history, I think you'll be able to find out that yeah, he did have a quick temper, and he certainly had his issues, but he did. A lot of people said, oh, he wasn't really a wrestler and he didn't like wrestling. Well, love wrestling. That's not true. That's not true at all. I remember an interview I saw really not that long ago discussing him getting to fight The Undertaker when The Undertaker was really a hot commodity with him and Paul Bearer. You know, Taker just, maybe it was during WrestleMania, like maybe the second or third appearance of The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And he said it was like a dream come true. It was like, really, you know, he said, I'm not nervous or I'm not whatever, but I was, you know, because that's The Undertaker. And yeah, that's a big deal for me. When he came down to Smoky Mountain, or he came down to one of those federations, and he said, you know, he was great to me. You know, he sold some things. His gimmick wasn't to sell, but he still sold some things, and he, you know, put me over to a certain extent, and it was great to put him over. And I think New Jack understood wrestling maybe a little better than most people think, because New Jack was one of those characters that you totally thought It really, honestly, is him I'm seeing. It's not a character. It's not a gimmick. It's not a charade. I am seeing this person, and this is his beliefs. And sometimes he did things that would make you honestly say, yeah, that must be the case. And he marked out a lot of people that way. Now, I'm not saying that he never did anything violent. He never did anything that was questionable or controversial. He did. But a lot of that, too, was to make that magic and make you keep thinking, the guy I'm seeing, he ain't kidding. And once again, if you were lucky enough, like I was, to be around him in a moment where there was no cameras, nothing to be gained by keeping up an image, you saw a really cool guy. And I'm definitely going to miss what he would have done in the future. He was doing some independent shows, not so much as a wrestler. His wrestling days were behind him, but he was doing some appearances and commentary and shoot interviews, and he was one of these guys that you turn on the camera and he'd always have something interesting to say. He'd always have a story to tell. And the more controversial, the better, because that's who he was. Todd, a really sad day for ECW fans.
You're absolutely right there. It's a sad day, not just for ECW fans. It's also a sad day for wrestling fans in general who used to watch New Jack back in the mid-90s, early 2000s. And you know, like you said, it's a big loss right there for everybody.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm sad because I see some people on the internet saying, oh, to hell with him, he hurt a lot of people and stuff. And that's not really who he was about. Yeah, he did do some crazy things, but once again, New Jack was about respect. If you respected him, he respected you. If he thought you were absolutely disrespecting him, then he dealt with it. Maybe he dealt with it in a more extreme way than other people dealt with it, but he dealt with it. Anyway, folks, look, let's go on to SmackDown before we get to our predictions about tonight's WrestleMania Backlash. I thought SmackDown did a really good job in once again presenting a really good show. I hope and I pray that it continues this way. But I'm starting to worry a little bit about it, and I'll get into that in a minute. First off, the major news, of course, is that Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler are no longer the women's tag team champions, which is probably a huge hallelujah. I don't think they should be a team. I don't necessarily want to see them fight each other because I'm not really all that interested in it. But I don't want to see them be a team either. I'd just rather see them go ahead and be solo performers. I think they both excel better at that. I understand why you're putting Nia Jax in a tag team. She's probably better suited to it to an extent. Shayna Baszler, I disagree with. I think she should just be solo. Losing the belts was a good idea. Losing the belts to Tamina and Natty, we'll see if it was a good idea. Not going to lie to you. It wouldn't be my choice. The reason it wouldn't be my choice isn't because I didn't want to see Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler lose the belts, because to be honest, I never thought they should have them. The reason I'm a little down on it is I think that when you are the women's tag team champions and you can go to both shows, you need to be over. You need to be a team that's really over and people really want to see you and people are really interested in you. And I'm sorry. Natty is one of the best wrestlers there, if not maybe the best wrestler there. Her personality and her charisma is just not high enough to be that. And Tamina's is next to none. And I think now you've got tag team champions who fans are just like, ho-hum, okay, big deal about. And they're the only tag team champion. So I don't know about this. I know what the WWE's philosophy is we're going to make them likable. We're going to make them charismatic. We're going to make fans care. I don't know if you're going to be able to do that. I hope you can. I know a lot of people were big on the fact that Nia was the one who took the pinfall, not Shayna Baszler, and that's great. I mean, I've never said Nia won't take the pinfall. She's taken it from Ronda Rousey. She's taken it from several people. She's taken the pinfall. She's been pinned plenty before. Did she make Tamina look like a world beater in doing it? No, because unfortunately it was one of these things where she was in the midst of finishing off Natty, didn't know that Tamina had made the tag. I would have much rather seen Tamina just pin her. Just give her the clean pin. Just give her the, yes, I know you're in the ring. Yes, I know you're my opponent, and you beat me. That didn't happen. I still don't think she's a good wrestler. I think she's very wooden, and I just don't see the appeal behind Nia Jax. I understand that she has the look, and I understand that if you want a monstrous women's wrestler that's like a Braun Strowman of the women's division, I get that. But at the end of the day, I don't know. You know, a good heel gets heat for the things that they pretend to do. Nia Jax got heat from the fans because of things she really did do. And there's a difference. That's why I don't consider her a great wrestler. I don't consider her heat good heat. It would be very easy for me as a wrestler to walk into an arena somewhere and no one knows who I am, and there's some 8-year-old kid standing there and I punch him dead in the face. And then everybody's going to say, well, that son of a bitch, I hope somebody kills him. But that's not good heat, because I really did that. Now, if I can make you hate me and I didn't really do anything to hurt anybody, then I'm a good heel. If I'm a good heel because of things I did outside the ring, things I did for real inside the ring, I don't know if that makes you a good heel. I think that really just makes you someone who's capitalizing on your mistakes. Nia Jax has made a ton of mistakes. And every single time she makes a mistake, they tell her to go ahead and capitalize on it. Yeah, I'm the one who broke Becky Lynch's nose. Yeah, but that was a mistake. I'm the one who injured Bayley and Charlotte Flair. Yeah, but those were mistakes. The WWE didn't give you a script that says you're going to break her nose, but not really. You really did it. So when you're really doing things and that's why you're getting heat, I don't know. I don't think that necessarily makes her a good heel. I'm glad they're not tag team champions anymore, Mike, and I'm glad they're doing something with Natty and Tamina. But I don't know if you want your women's tag team champions to be like the two least charismatic people on the whole roster.
No, and it does, you know, if one of them was carrying the charisma, that's fine, but, you know, that's not the deal here. And look, as far as Nia is, you know, there are big women, big strong type women that have the charisma. I mean, Beth Phoenix was one. China was one. Dawn Marie was one. They were all big monster-type women that had the charisma, whereas Nia Jax just doesn't. And, yeah, she may be a good wrestler, and she may be better than Nia, but really she's a bore. I'm talking about Tamina. She's a boring wrestler, but you got to give Nia, at least she sold the Superfly splash. She tends not to sell things, does Nia.
Yeah, but I just don't think she has a choice. I mean, if WWE says, okay, well, this is the way the match is ending, how do you not sell the splash? What are you supposed to do, kick out? I mean, and then you'll be fired probably. You know, you can't go into business for yourself. So if they're telling you, you're going to miss the tag, she's going to climb up and do the splash, that's the way you're losing. Okay, well, then that's what you do. You want to cash your paycheck. See, I'd much rather have a situation by where Nia Jax is hated for the things that she pretends to do in a storyline rather than her lack of ability, her tendency to blow moves and actually hurt people with her incompetence. That's really not good heat. That's not good heat. I mean, if you want to go by that standard, then I guess you could just have some dude come in who, you know, has a rap sheet a mile long and say, well, this guy, you know, robbed a pregnant woman and this guy beats his wife and this guy does this and we're going to involve his personal life for real. And then you're going to say, okay, well, I hope somebody kicks his ass, but that's not talent. Talent is when you're a really nice person and you can get people to just hate you because you're that good. That's why I don't like cheap heat. You know, I never liked it when a wrestler would get in and say, where are we at? We're in New York. Oh, everybody in New York sucks. Yeah, okay. Cheap heat. Or threaten to hit some guy in the front row. Cheap heat. Real good heat is like, you know, I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me, but real good heat is like Roman Reigns now. This is good heat. He's not really even acknowledging the fans when they pump in the little, you suck and everything. He's basically just saying, look, what I'm doing for the good of my family. This is the motivation. I firmly and truly believe that I'm the guy who's putting bread on the table. I firmly and truly believe that it's my hard work that has put all of us in a position where we're top dogs on a major television show. But his lack of candor and his smugness rubs you the wrong way. That's his acting ability. That's his ability. And it's totally different than saying, you know, I really in real life smacked some woman who had a Roman suck sign. And then you say, oh, well, he's a bastard who would hit a woman. Or I really, you know, hurt this guy for real because I really don't care. As long as I get over, I don't care. It's just some dude and then, you know, I dropped him on his head on purpose. Okay, well, that's easy, cheap heat. Don't like that kind of cheap heat. That's why I don't like Nia Jax. She's never proven to me one time that she can get heat on her own without really doing something that makes the fans angry with her. For real. See, there's a difference between that for real heat and the fake heat. And I don't know. I just, you know, I guess I'm old school, but I just don't think a wrestler's heat should be based on the fact that, yeah, I broke somebody's arm accidentally because I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, I hurt somebody's rib cage because I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, I broke somebody's nose because I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, I knocked a girl unconscious because I'm too unathletic to fall properly. And the fans say, man, you suck. You're injuring people. We hate you for that. Okay, and I'll use that as my heat. I'm lazy. That means I don't have any ability to get heat. But anyway, they lose. That's fine. I'm a little confused by the Dirty Dogs and the idea that Dolph Ziggler has lost to both Mysterios back-to-back because that usually indicates they are not losing the belt. That usually indicates that they would win tonight, but I don't know. I don't know about that. I have pretty good sources telling me that they've got the Usos lined up to take that belt away already from Rey Mysterio and Dominic. And the sad news is that would make them heels. I guess. Now, what I'm hoping the WWE is smart enough to do with this is to have Jimmy Uso say, I am not mad at Jay. I'll still be tag team partners with Jay. I'll still take on whoever the tag team champions are, and we'll still win because that's my brother. I have a problem with Roman because then if they win the belts, even if Jay is a heel and Jimmy is kind of like, well, I'm going to look out for my brother, but I also don't like Roman. Jimmy also becomes one of the most interesting characters on SmackDown because while he's loyal to his brother and sees his brother's shortcomings as a weakness of character that he won't stand up to Roman, he still supports him. He still wants to be his tag team partner, but he's not going to take Roman's crap. That's the way I hope they handle this. Because if they just make him another Roman lapdog, he will cease to be interesting overnight, and he'll just be Jey Uso with a different name. And we do not want that. What you're doing now is exactly what you should do. You're separating their personalities. Jey is a little more complacent and a little more calm and a little more, well, I guess I'll go with the flow. And Jimmy's a little more radical, saying there ain't no way I'm going with the flow of this. Even though I love my brother, that makes them two unique and different personalities. Please keep them that way. I don't want to see two Jimmy Usos or two Jey Usos. I want to see two separate guys. And the only way to do that is to keep Jimmy Uso the way he is, saying Roman's a part of the family, he's not the whole family, and what he's doing is wrong, and he's not treating my brother right. You can still win the tag team belts as heels if that's what you want to do. Just don't change Jimmy's outlook toward Roman. I think that would be crucially important, Todd, because it does look like the Mysterios will probably end up winning.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said about the Usos and everything. You have, like, one, have Jimmy be, like, against Roman and have Jimmy stick up for his brother Jey. That's pretty good right there.
I think it's a great idea. Got to keep Jimmy separate from Jey, Mike, if you want this to work properly.
Right, and we know where this is going to be headed. Yeah, they're going to win they're going to eventually win the championships, but you know where this is going to be heading. This is going to be heading to the point of where they're all three of them on the same page, but that's going to be down the line. I mean, probably 3, 4, 5 months down the line, probably, where they're all on the same page, you know. So, and if the WWE plays this right, yeah, you like the Usos as a tag team, but they could absolutely—they've already developed Jimmy Uso as a possible main event singles guy. I mean, Jey Uso as a main event singles guy. They could be headed that way with Jimmy if they play it right. Now, am I confident they will play it right? No, but it could happen that way. And as far as heat versus cheap heat, the best example of great heat is, of course, New Jack. Whatever he did, it wasn't cheap. Whatever he did, it ended up getting him good or bad, face or heel. And at one point, when you heard his music hit, he was that guy that when you heard his music hit, you knew somebody was going to get fucked up when he came out. It didn't matter if he won or lose.
A lot of people will say, well, he was like Nia Jax. He hurt a lot of people. Yeah, but there's a difference. The difference is Nia Jax hurt people with incompetence. She hurt people because, oops, I don't know how to do this move. Oops, I don't have body control. Oops, I blew that move. New Jack didn't do that. If he hurt you, it was probably intentional. Now, some people say, well, that's even worse. Well, you know, yeah, maybe. But there are points in time where you say to yourself, well, how much am I going to get disrespected before I take a stand for myself and my business and say I'm not going to be disrespected by these people? I think New Jack was one of those people who he worked a lot of matches with a lot of people, and nobody complained that he ever tried to hurt them funny. It was only just a few select people who did the things he didn't like. One of the things, I mean, let's face it, if you agree to go up on a scaffold like Grimes did with him and jump off the scaffold, and that's the spot, we are going off the scaffold together, and you get up there and say, I'm not doing it, Jack, I'm not doing it. Well, what choice does New Jack have? He's, we got to do it. This is the finish of the match. What do you want to do? What are we supposed to do, climb down and be booed out of the building? This is the spot we both agreed to do. Let's do it. And then because Grimes doesn't go off the right way, because he's scared to go off the right way, he lands on New Jack's head, crushes his skull, blinds him in one eye. You don't want revenge on that guy? You wouldn't say, look, that guy pretty much intentionally hurt me by agreeing to do something, not doing it, making me force him to do it, and then landing wrong and could have killed me. I could be dead because of his incompetence. Well, and never even say, call you in the hospital to say, I'm sorry. That can make some frustration. So, you know, you can argue what he did was wrong. Two wrongs don't make a right. But I'm just saying it's a whole different situation than Nia Jax, who hurts people with incompetence. Anyway, I kind of disagree that they're going to be on the same page, or I hope they're not on the same page. I don't want to see a time, I've changed my mind. I don't want to see a time when both Usos and Roman Reigns are a clique and they're all working together. I don't want to see it. And I'll tell you why I don't want to see it. Thought I did for a while. I don't want to see it because Jimmy Uso's too good at this, and it's separating him and it's making him a totally different character. I don't mind if he does this, I'm going to look out for my brother, so reluctantly I will, you know, I'll be a part of this Roman Reigns thing, but I don't like Roman, and I don't like what he's doing with my brother. I'll accept that. I will not accept that he just becomes Jey Uso with a different look, because then it's boring. Then it's okay. Then I get it. Roman Reigns has a henchman tag team. How many people have had a henchman tag team? Everybody on the damn planet. Oh, these are my henchmen. Okay, Roman don't need that. What we need right now is to have this, where there's three separate attitudes. And all three guys have totally different personalities, because that's what's going to make them stand out in the long run. Now, we get a weird Baron Corbin-Shinsuke Nakamura match. I'm not sure what that was all about. Because not only does Baron Corbin win clean, but then Nakamura sneak attacks him and takes his crown. And truthfully, makes Nakamura look like the heel. I'm not sure where they're going with this. It's really bizarre. Really bizarre. I'm assuming they're going to do some battle for the crown thing or whatever, but whoever booked this certainly might have done a better job of this, because if Shinsuke had been ripped off, the referee didn't see his foot on the ropes, if Baron Corbin used a foreign object, if there was blatant cheating where Nakamura is justified in saying, I didn't lose that match, then you're okay with it. But he lost clean and then sneak attacks Corbin. So I don't know if you're trying to turn Corbin face. If you are, that was a horrible way to do it. Or you're trying to turn Nakamura heel, and if you are, that's a horrible way to do it. But it ended up just sort of being a confusing mess, Mike, and I'm not really sure where that's going to go. It doesn't seem to make a ton of sense.
And frankly, that's not the way I thought it was going to go with that, because I brought up the fact that we know what's happening with his ex-tag team partner, right? He's going against, I believe it's Roman Reigns, for the title, right? And we know that all the stuff is around that match as well. We'll get to that in when we start giving our predictions for the pay-per-view. But what I thought was going to happen was, well, at some point we would see them kind of Nakamura and what's his name kind of reform at least for one night to go against the Usos, because the Usos were kind of toeing the line with Roman Reigns, right? Well, if this is, like you said, this is a poor way to turn this guy heel, or a poor way to turn him face. But and also, we also know that coming up in the next, say, 6 months, this whole King Corbin thing has a shelf life. We know the King of the Ring is coming up, right? So,
yeah.
So that's going to end probably relatively soon, I would think. Because that pay-per-view is coming, and there's going to be a new King of the Ring. So, you know, just what are they doing here? I don't know. And like you said, it's a poor way to turn either one of those two guys.
Yeah, because it leaves the fans saying, well, I don't know. I don't like Corbin, so good for Shinsuke. But then to a certain extent, you're also saying, but that's not really what you want Shinsuke to do if you want to root for him. It's just weird. It was very weird booking, and I don't get it. We'll see what they're doing with it. You're probably right. It's probably going to come down to some King of the Ring thing where, you know, the crown is up for grabs. Like you said, the shelf life on it's about done. To be perfectly honest, the shelf life on Baron Corbin as a heel is about done. And if you are going to turn him face, I'm for it, but that's not the way to do it. I'm telling you right now, and Shinsuke Nakamura is also not the guy to do it off of. You got to do it off a guy who fans really hate because they don't like Baron Corbin. So it's going to have to be somebody that they really, really don't like. Or something so egregiously horrible has to happen to Corbin that you say, well, that's not right. It doesn't matter how much I don't like him. That's awful. That's the only way you can turn a really good heel face. And Corbin's been a really good heel. You can say what you want about him. No, he's not championship quality. No, he's not a serious contender for a major title. But he was a good heel. He's a good heel in the sense that you put a face up against him and everybody will root for that face. Nobody was really rooting for Corbin. That is a good heel, technically. A lot of people will say, well, you know, there's some great heels. Look at CM Punk. Yeah, but half the people rooted for him. So that's not really a good heel. If half the people are rooting for you, that's not really a good heel. A good heel is able to turn the audience until you say the vast majority of people, an overwhelming majority of people, are not rooting for this guy. Then that's a good heel. And it's real hard to do in today's wrestling because no matter how villainous and horrible you are, there's always going to be people who root for the heels. And if you can somehow manage to get the vast majority not to, you've done a really good job. And Baron Corbin is that person. So I give him all the credit in the world. He hasn't risen to any heights, but yet to come. I'd be all for flipping him. And I'd be all for flipping Shinsuke back to a heel, too, but not this way. Not this way, because fans are probably cheering him right now, saying, good, Corbin deserved it. I hate Corbin. So that doesn't work. Anyway, so how was SmackDown overall? Well, once again, I think Jimmy Uso did a fabulous job. I think Jey Uso did a fabulous job. If there were two more underrated people on that microphone, I don't know of them. I never knew they were this good. See, when they came out with the whole Uso penitentiary and that kind of stuff, I'm like, okay, well, they're good with a catchphrase. And as long as they stay in their lane and they do this, we're gangsta type guys. They can handle it. But I didn't think they could do all this. I didn't think in a million years, if you handed them a good angle where Jey Uso has to be torn between listening to his brother who's always been there for him and Roman who's bringing him to what he considers main event status and family and bringing all this in and really looking like he's torn between what to do, I'd say, oh, can he handle it? The answer is, yeah, he can handle it really well. And he seems to be able to handle it with ease. And Jimmy Uso to have this righteous anger still say, yeah, you're part of the family and I can respect what you're doing, but not what you're doing with my brother and you're not the whole family and you're lying about that. He's doing a great job. And Roman is doing a great job. Remember when everybody on this panel told you that Roman Reigns is a great professional wrestler? When you were all booing him. And we said, it's not that he's terrible at what he does. It's that you're giving him terrible things to do. And nobody's really going to be able to overcome what you're telling him to do because you're booking him in a way that he's bound to get booed. He's going to get booed by the crowd because he's looking like the chosen one. He's looking like he's handed everything on a silver platter. The lines you're giving him to read are dumb. It's not working. No one's going to pull this off. No one. And you're blaming Roman rather than blaming WWE. We saw through that and we said, no, Roman, if you give him the right thing, he's real good at what he does. Well, now you see. Now you see we were right. Because he's very good at playing this character. Very, very good. And it's changed. Take this away from SmackDown. Take this away from SmackDown. And you tell me, how good is SmackDown? Not very. This is SmackDown right now. This is what we're tuning in to see. Everybody else are the special guest stars. That's what it amounts to. If SmackDown is a TV show, Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, Paul Heyman, Jimmy Uso, those are the stars. And everybody else is like special guest star. You may be interested in their plot lines and, oh, I wonder what's going to happen to this less important character or minor character. But the major characters, the one you're tuning in for, that's Roman and his crew, Todd. There's no question about it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like you said, like you said about the Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman, and the Usos thing. Well, like you said, they're like the stars, of the sitcom, and you have your guest stars. It's the show right now.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a sitcom. It could be a drama. But either way, Mike, they really are the stars. They're the reason people are tuning in to see it.
Right. Think about this. Go back to 1980, and what was one of the big shows in 1980? It was Dallas. And who drove that show for a long period of time? JR, Larry Hagman, you know?
Yeah.
And when they did that whole Who Shot JR deal, I mean, that thing went through the summer. After they went off of that season, that thing went through the summer, and everybody was wondering, okay, who shot JR? That's where we are right now. And really right now, I mean, I love Paul Heyman to death, but I don't know if he's really needed right now in this whole angle, because all three of them are great on the mic right now. Roman, Jimmy, and Jay, they're all great on the mic. I mean, generally speaking, when Paul Heyman is needed, it's because he has somebody like, I don't know, Brock Lesnar that they don't want to talk or he can't talk, you know. So,
you know, Mike, that's a very good point, because I think you're right, and I think the WWE had no faith in Roman Reigns. I think the WWE said, Paul, you're there to be Roman Reigns' mouthpiece in case he shits the bed, because we're not 100% sure he can even do this. And, boy, did they get a surprise, because he really can do it. And I think you're right. I'm not 100% sure Paul Heyman is needed in this. But I'll tell you what would be super interesting is if Roman Reigns started getting sabotaged backstage, or, you know, not necessarily beaten, but just things happening. And you're wondering, who is it? Would seem to be Jimmy. He certainly doesn't like Roman very much, but maybe it's Jay who's fed up, or maybe it's Paul, who says, this whole thing has gotten out of my control, and I'm not really able to control it, so, you know, I'm not going to be sick and banana to somebody, and he certainly could go get the big boy if he wanted to. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot you could do with this. The reason Paul Heyman, if he adds anything to it, and you're right, I'm not 100% sure he's needed in this angle, but if he adds anything to it, it's that he solidifies Roman Reigns as, no, Roman really is a heel. See, because there's a lot of people who would say, well, Roman keeps saying, I love my brother. I love both of my brothers. I love my whole family. Why do you think I'm doing this? You can't take on this responsibility that I took on. It's an awful lot of responsibility, and you're not ready for it, and neither is your brother. The mantle I'm wearing is a big burden upon me, but I'm doing it for my family. And some people might say, well, in a way, he's right. But as long as Paul is sitting there, you say, yeah, but then why would you associate yourself with someone like that who you know in your heart of hearts isn't out for anybody's best interest except himself? See, I think that's the chip that Paul plays, is that it clearly solidifies Roman Reigns as a heel. Even if fans start to say, well, some of the things he's saying is true, you always have that, yeah, but why then associate with Paul? He's not part of the family. He's not someone who's, you know, you're helping to benefit because he's your family. He's a sneaky dude who you came up against many times before and said you hated. So I guess that solidifies the Roman Reigns heel thing. That's the only thing I can think of. But you're right. As far as a mouthpiece, he's really not needed. Roman's handling it fine. I guess, too, the second thing is you don't want Roman going to Adam Pearce or whatever and saying, I want this or I demand this, because it almost makes him look less powerful than he is. Right now, he's like the mafia leader who's sending out his, what do they call those guys, Conjo Lista or whatever, to consigliere. Sending out his consigliere to go, speak for him. And I guess that's what they want. But, yeah, as far as the mic is concerned, Paul ain't really saying that much. He doesn't need to. But when he does, I think he's brilliant at what he does, because when he was cornered here on SmackDown and they said, are you basically saying that Jimmy Uso can't beat Cesaro? He said, I don't know if Jimmy Uso can beat Cesaro. I don't know. But I know Roman Reigns can and will. So he's still selling Jimmy Uso by saying, I don't know, I guess it's possible he can. He didn't say, well, of course he can. He's no Roman Reigns. He's very good at what he does. And their match was very good. And Roman Reigns interfering makes it, again, one of these things where you don't know exactly what's going to happen. Jimmy Uso says, why are you interfering in my match? I had him, but the world knows, no, you didn't have him. You were probably a few seconds away from getting pinned. And Roman's going to bring that up. You know Roman is going to say you had him. He was minutes away from pinning you because you don't have what it takes. You can say you do all you want, but you don't. And either Jimmy is going to concede to that, and maybe I'm not that guy, or he's going to rebel against it. We're all hoping he rebels against it. We'll see. But the deal with SmackDown is this storyline has freed them to not have to be so good with the rest. In other words, you can have a C-plus show, throw in the Roman Reigns segments with the Usos, and you got a B-plus show. That's how good this has been. They don't have to work so hard anymore because they've got the main guys. They've got the stars, and they've got you wanting to know what their stars are doing. You may tune into whatever show and say, I'm interested in all the characters, and I'm interested in these subplots and these minor character storylines too, but the reason I'm tuning in is to see what these main characters, what's going to happen. Well, that's them now, and they've got you because unlike Raw, you really are interested in their main characters. On Raw, you're probably more interested in some of their minor characters. That's the difference. So for me, I'm going to give this show a B+. I thought that switching the tag team belt, women's tag team belts, was a good idea. I'm not so thrilled with the team they chose, but it is what it is. I'd have rather seen Naomi and Lana, to be honest. I think Lana's earned it. But if that's the way you're going to go, fine. At least you got it off Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. I thought the Uso stuff was great again, very compelling. I thought everyone did a great job in that. Cesaro is still on the mic. He's not quite what he should be. Cesaro is not a young rookie. So I got a horrible newsflash for you. He's not going to get any better on the mic. He is what he is. You're either going to accept him the way he is or you're not. He's not getting better. He's not going to be that guy who's going to grab that microphone and give you a promo that makes you go, damn, it's not going to happen. So you're just going to have to accept it the way it is. As far as the Apollo Crews stuff, I wasn't too thrilled with that. Number one, I'm not even too thrilled with using this Dabakato guy because he looks about as Nigerian as, you know, Jimmy Uso. I just don't see that as being too realistic. And, you know, with everybody running in and everything that's happening, we're going to get a four-way at some point or whatever it's going to be for the title. That's sort of leaving me cold. I'm not overly interested in this. You've given Apollo Crews the best character of his life, and the simple fact is he's just not that interesting. We've given it some time. And unfortunately, more people are interested in Colonel Aziz than they are Apollo at this point. That's just the way it is. But again, when you're rescued by your major characters, it makes a difference in the show. So, Mike, I'm going to give this show a B+.
I got to give it a B+ as well. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, look, I'd rather have seen them give it to Lana and Naomi, and frankly, that would have made an interesting storyline because we know Naomi is Jimmy Uso's, you know, wife, you know, and
yeah.
We know, I mean, to tell you the truth, Naomi, I think as a face, that's been played out, you know? And so it's probably time for them to find a way to flip her. And look, the best way to flip her is what right now?
Yeah, or, you know, you could make her, you could make a very strong argument. You could just revamp her as a face and be the person who tells Jimmy you're doing the right thing. Don't buckle to Roman in this nonsense. I know you love your brother, and I know you want to help him, but, you know, if he wants to be the ass kisser of the family, that's, don't be that. And they could go out on their own and do something. That would be really good, too. There's so much, this is the beauty of this angle that I don't want people to lose sight of. The genius of this storyline is that it can go in 500 friggin' directions. And all 500 of them are interesting. That's the beauty of a great professional wrestling angle, is when you can say, I could take this thing in a bazillion directions. And all of them will still have the fans tuned in. You got a winner here. You got a real winner. You don't want to involve Naomi at all? Okay, fine. You still got something good going. You do want to involve Naomi? She could join up with Roman Reigns and convince her husband to do the same. Or she could join up and her husband refuses and there's tension. Or she could be the one to tell her husband, don't. You don't need to be a part of this. There's so much you could do. That's what makes this angle as good as it is. There's an endless amount of branches on the tree. This is a writer's paradise. This is something that a writer hopes for. And you say, man, I could do anything. We can go in any direction with this. And it's still probably going to be a winner. It's going to be very hard for the WWE to blow this. Very, very hard. This is almost an unmess-upable angle. And that's the beauty of it. Anyway, Todd, what do you give the rating this week for this week's SmackDown?
I'm going to give it a B+ as well.
So we all agree it was a pretty damn good show. Now, before we get on to the ratings, I wanted to mention something because there's a rumor going around, and the rumor's been pretty much dispelled, so let me get to it, and that is that Bray Wyatt has asked to be off television because he is psychologically not dealing well with the death of Luke Harper. That is not true. Now, I'm sure he took the death of Luke Harper very hard. And I'm sure that he's been in a depression, and I'm sure he's been in mourning. But the truth is, Bray Wyatt has been backstage at some of these things. He's just not being used. And he does want to be back on television. From everything I've heard, he wants to be back on television. So if you're hearing those rumors that Bray Wyatt is psychologically unprepared to continue wrestling right now because of the death of Luke Harper, that is not true. At least by all my sources, it's not true. Okay, so let's get to our predictions. This, as far as I know, this is a 6-match card. Now, what the WWE's been doing lately, and I applaud them for doing it, by the way, is they've been making their pay-per-views under 3 hours. They've been giving people plenty of time, and they haven't been booking 11 matches. They've just been booking 6 or sometimes 7, and that's enough. WWE's finally got the formula correct. Just give us 6 or 7 matches in 2.5 hours or so. That's plenty of time. That's plenty of time. So let's start with Bayley versus Bianca Belair. Now, this is one of the, unfortunately, least appealing feuds we've had in a while. Bayley just laughing at Bianca Belair. I don't know what that's all about. I really don't. It's dumb. And I was glad to see her on SmackDown get a little more serious when Bianca Belair said the only reason you're mad is you had nothing to do at WrestleMania except get beat up by the Bella twins. And her saying, I see a lot of myself in you and the same mistakes I made. It's like looking in a mirror, you know. that made it a little more compelling, but there's no way on God's green earth that Bayley's winning the belt. There is no way on God's green earth that Bayley is winning the belt. You did not put Bianca Belair in that position at WrestleMania just to have her drop this belt to Bayley. Now, I will warn people about one thing. If you drop Bayley much farther down the food chain, she's going to be irrelevant. She has virtually lost every match she's been in for as long as I can remember. Recently. She's so far out of the title picture once she loses this match, I don't know what you're going to do with her. Personally, if I was writing for this, I would say, hey, let her lose the match and go into this depression and go back to being the old Bayley. You're going to have Sasha come back, and she's all obviously a heel. So why do you need Bayley to be a heel, too? You don't. You got plenty of heels. It might be time to rejuvenate Bayley as a face again. Stop the stupid ding-dong crap and all this other stuff, which everyone's given her so much credit, too. I hear people like Mick Foley and other people saying she's so good at being a heel. She's just so fabulous. I could not disagree more. I think it is so forced and so phony and so out of her character that we're not even buying it. I have never once looked at Bayley and said, damn, I hope she loses. I really don't like her. I've always looked at her and said, she's doing her best to get people to hate her, but it's not really working because it's just not convincing. Some people can't do it, you know. Not everyone in the world can just do heel face, heel face, heel face. Bayley's one of those people who she's just not that good of a heel. She would have been a good heel if she was that torn heel where she was like, well, I don't know why the fans are booing me. But she's had enough. She just snapped. She attacked Sasha. She's taken shortcuts. She's lying to herself, in other words. She's saying, you know, all my fans wanted me to win and they wanted me to rise to the top. And now when I'm trying to get there, they're booing me. I don't get it. Poor me. That would work. But she never, ever should have insulted the fans, not once. It always should have been like, you're turning on me. I'm not turning on you. I still love all you people. Remember, you know, you're my guys. I don't get it. But then she's being disingenuous because she cheats and says, no, I didn't cheat. No, no. Almost like I'm desperate. I have to get back to the top. That would have been convincing. This whole nonsense of I'm the greatest and the ding-dong door thing and everything, that's just terrible. It's not working at all. Not at all. So you didn't handle her right as a heel anyway. And then you instantly turned Sasha heel, which didn't help, because then it almost made Bayley look like, well, maybe she had justification to do it to Sasha Banks after all. Sasha did it enough to her. So from the get-go, her heel persona was wrong. Her motivation was wrong. All of it was wrong. So that didn't help her. But I just don't think she's naturally that good of a heel. That smiling, happy, good-natured Bayley is who she is, and you could have made her a smiling, happy, good-natured heel who simply doesn't understand why in the world would the fans boo me. I don't get it. Don't you understand I'm doing all this for you guys? You guys wanted me to succeed. You guys wanted me to be on top, and here I am, and I don't get why you're turning on me. I still love all you guys. That would have worked. This doesn't work. So if you're not going to do it right, just don't do it at all. Flip her. Make this the last heel thing we see from her. You want her to take a month off or whatever, revamp her at some point, do it. But she's not winning tonight, Mike. I just don't see Bianca Belair dropping this belt.
Yeah, it's too soon for Bianca to drop the belt. You know, and really, I think what they would want is either Sasha to come back and take it from her, or the way it's looking like, they're trying to build Carmella up some. So
yep.
At some point, Carmella's got to get her chance at a true chance at the title. But yeah, you're right. Bayley needs to be off TV. And what did you say a few months back? You know, have her come back and say something to the effect of, I made a mistake. I should, this, that wasn't me, that wasn't my true personality, you know who I am, you know, this, yep, that type of stuff. You basically said, you basically gave them the blueprint of how to flip Bayley face again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like Sabretooth used to say, you got to have that come to Jesus moment if you're a heel, and her come to Jesus moment would simply to be to say, look, this wasn't me, you know. I look at myself and I'm ashamed of myself. I lost everything. I lost my fans. I lost my place in this company. I lost my dignity. I lost everything. And to be honest with you, it was because my best friend in the world, Sasha Banks, I allowed to be a role model for me. And I saw what she did. And I saw that she could get away with it. And I saw that she was rising to the top. And she kept telling me, this is the way, this is the way, this is the way. And I listened. And even when I turned against her, it was because that's what she would have done. And I kept always saying to myself, what would Sasha do? What would Sasha do? Not what would Bayley do. And I lost myself. And I don't know if I can get my fans back. I don't know if I'll ever regain my dignity. But I'm sure as hell going to try to regain my place in this company. And I think fans would definitely go for that. You may as well try it because she's not going anywhere as a heel. So you may as well give it the old college try, as they say. Todd, I don't see Bayley winning this belt tonight.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, Bianca Belair just won this belt. Heck, at WrestleMania, and you know, like you said, I just don't want. I'm gonna go with Belair to retain her SmackDown Women's title.
Yeah, I think this one's pretty obvious. So let's go to The Miz versus Damian Priest. Now I have heard, the WWE is very high on Damian Priest, but I'm gonna tell you, I'm not. I don't think his personality is too good, really. I mean, when he was Punishment Martinez and he was just this badass dude, it was working. Trying to make him this, I don't know what you're trying to make him. That's the thing. I don't even get what he's supposed to be. You know, if you hear a name like Damian Priest or Aleister Black, you get this idea of, okay, dark, sort of sinister, whatever. And then somebody comes out, like Damian Priest comes out now, throwing tomatoes and doing one-liners, and you're like, who, what? I don't know what he's even supposed to be. But whatever it is, he's lost that badass persona, and now he's just into this, I'm a good wrestler, and I'm a top-level type guy, waiting to break out type character. That should have never been what he was. He always should have been that badass character. But you got him tied down so much with his feud with The Miz and Morrison, that he automatically becomes a mid-carder, and it's going to be hard to get him out of that. I'm sorry, I don't think it's going to fly. I just don't think it's going to fly. You had the perfect chance anyway. You wanted to make this guy a star. He needed to turn on Bad Bunny. He needed to turn on Bad Bunny, period, end of conversation at WrestleMania. And say, I did not come in this federation to play bodyguard and second fiddle to some rapper who's never been in a damn ring in his life, getting all of the publicity at WrestleMania when I'm playing second fiddle. I didn't come here for that crapola. And he would have been hated, man, because everybody liked Bad Bunny. If he beat the friggin' hell out of Bad Bunny and used that line that I ain't playing second fiddle to some wannabe wrestler, rap star who wants to cosplay being a wrestler. That ain't what I'm about. You would have had a really good character. But no, instead he's throwing tomatoes with the New Day. So I don't know what to tell you. So now he's a comedy guy like the New Day. Let's all have fun. We're the Three Stooges. But my name is Damian Priest. He's going to win. But I think he's going to be second banana again in a bigger story because I think somehow Morrison's going to cause The Miz to lose. And The Miz isn't going to take it the same way Morrison took The Miz causing him to lose. Morrison took it with, well, he tried. I think the Miz is going to blame him and get in his face, and I think you might see a flip. I really do. I don't know, because I don't know what else you'd do. So if that's the case, it's almost like Damian Priest is the third banana again, Mike, in a greater story, and that doesn't do his career any good.
Right. It doesn't help him. And look, basically that whole thing with the Archer of Infamy, if you remember back in the salad days of Lucha Underground, there was this guy called King Cuerno, right? He was basically doing that same thing with the bow and arrow and the Archer of Infamy and all that stuff. So it's not a new gimmick. It's not a new part of that gimmick. Now, it doesn't make sense for him. I mean, like you said, I'd rather see him as that badass, you know. If they had played him right, he could be one of those guys that when you hear the music, you know, you say, I don't care if he wins or loses, he's going to beat somebody's ass, you know. But they didn't. Again, this is the WWE not playing somebody right with him. And you're right about what's going to happen. You're probably going to see a 2 or 3 month feud after this between Morrison and the Miz. And what I like to see, yeah, I would like to see it. You know, I think it would be a handful of good matches. It'd be to some extent, it'd be what happened with the Miz and Dolph Ziggler way back when, you know. But would I like to see? Yeah, I would like to see it, but not this way.
That's the thing. And if they had taken my advice, Bad Bunny did put on a pretty good match. Again, a lot of the moves that he did was reliant upon the other guy. I get that. They were very easy wrestling moves that relies on your opponent more than you. But still, he looked good. That's what counted. And if you had had him do all of those wonderful things, and then, out of what would appear to be jealousy, Damian Priest turned on and beat the hell out of him and came out with that philosophy of I ain't playing second banana to some wannabe and send him packing. Well, you didn't have any night after WrestleMania Bad Bunny thing where you just like, well, he took care of Bad Bunny, I guess. You could have brought Bad Bunny back. You could have said he's actually going to have a match against Damian Priest, and people would have been real interested in it. You would have had a return for Bad Bunny, who you say you want to work with again. And it would have been one that the fans were real interested in, because you'd be like, whoa, man, I mean, this could be hot and heavy. They don't get it right a lot of the time. And unfortunately, Damian Priest has become a character that I'm just not that invested in. Sorry, I'm just not. So let's go to, I guess we'll go to the tag team match with the Dirty Dogs versus Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio. There is no doubt about it. Derek in the chat room said it earlier. He's absolutely correct. These guys constantly saying they'd be the first father-son duo tag team ever, ever, ever. Well, then you already know they're winning. You're not going to promote this constantly. And then, oh, but they weren't. They lost. Now, usually the formula is if you lose on SmackDown and stuff, then you're winning at the pay-per-view. If that's the case, then certainly the Dirty Dogs should win because they've been made to look terrible on SmackDown. But I don't think it's going to – there's only one way this would ever happen. There's only one way that the Dirty Dogs win, and that is if Rey and Dominic get into a fight. And I don't think they're ready to do that yet. They're going to do that eventually. But I think they want to do the history thing first. I think they want to have the first father and son tag team ever champions, and then they'll do it later on. Because I do think that's coming. So I'm going to go with Rey and Dominic, Todd. I think, you know, the publicity they've given for them to possibly be the first father-son duo to ever hold the tag team belts is indication that's exactly what they're going to do.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Rey and Dominic Mysterio being the first ever tag team champions of SmackDown, but it looks, I don't think they're going to win the belts. I think they're going to win it by disqualification or something like that.
Oh, okay. So you don't think they're going to take the belts? I do, Mike, because I think they've been hyping it too much that they'd be the, you know, they'd be the history makers.
Yeah, I think they're going to hype it because, remember, this is, and I do remember Ray saying this, this is the last thing he wants to do before he retires, is to hold
yep.
the belt, hold the tag team belts with his son. So,
yep.
and it would make sense that it would get it out the way. And to tell you the truth, even if they do win it, it's sort of a temporary belt because we know what's going to happen. Somewhere down the line, the Usos are going to get their hands on those belts again. So it's only a transitional type thing, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. I think they're going to get it. And like you said, I don't know how long they'll hold it. As long as they want to stretch this Uso story out, which to me, they can stretch it out as long as they want. I wouldn't be too quick to tell the story. Let's keep it playing until the fans start to grow a little restless with it, because right now they're eating it up. So I guess we'll go to the three-way dance for the women's belt. We have Asuka, Rhea Ripley, and Charlotte Flair. You know, I don't often agree with Dave Bautista, but I agree with him this time when he tweeted, "How are you jobbing Asuka out? How can you possibly job Asuka out? I don't care if it's to Rhea Ripley. I don't care who it's to. How do you job Asuka out? I mean, she should be the favorite in this match. And now it's looking like she's the one who's just being put in there so Charlotte doesn't have to get pinned or Rhea Ripley doesn't have to get pinned. And that's a shame. If it comes to that, that's a shame. Now, I don't know what the situation with Charlotte is. I don't know whether she still needs time off for this walking tall thing she's doing for USA or if it's already been filmed. I don't know if they're still if she's still in the great graces of the WWE. I know Rhea Ripley's been a bomb. I don't care what anybody says, and I know she's got a lot of fans. And I know it's an unpopular thing for me to say, but I don't see anything in her. Her personality is, you know, yawn fest. In the WWE. I liked her in NXT, but what they're doing with her here, they can't even decide what she is. She's a heel one week, she's a face, she's a heel, she's a face. We don't even know what the hell she is. And it's been nothing short of a yawn fest, and her mic work has been really not good at all. It's pretty bad when Asuka can just come in and scream things you don't even understand, and she's better on the mic. Doesn't seem to have any emotion. She just goes through the. She is Tamina Snuka with a maybe a little bit better arsenal of moves. She's just not that interesting. And the problem with Rhea Ripley that I think you're going to see play out here is Rhea Ripley in NXT looked really impressive. She's sort of big and kind of muscular, and you're like, man, she's a savage. Compared to these other girls. But in the WWE, where you have Charlotte Flair, who's big like that too, and as far as her, you know, size and her muscular and everything, she's not. So she doesn't really come off as that, I'm a huge badass. And that could be a problem for her. She's not the biggest badass on the show. So that could be a problem for her. My instinct tells me they're going to give it to Charlotte because that's what they always do. But I don't know, again, if her schedule will not allow it, then they won't. I'm fairly sure they're not going to give it to Asuka because they've already been there, done that, and the WWE usually doesn't double back. So unfortunately, I see Asuka taking the pinfall from one of these two. If it's Charlotte Flair who wins, it'll just be to set up Charlotte Flair, Rhea Ripley, with Rhea Ripley saying, "You didn't pin me." If it's Rhea Ripley pinning Asuka, then Charlotte still has the, yeah, but you didn't pin me. So either way, I unfortunately think, Mike, that Asuka is there to count the ring lights, and that's a shame.
Right, and that's the thing. And like you said, I don't know if they filmed it yet, the Walking Tall deal, or if they're going to film it. I mean, if they're going to film it, then I would say Rhea Ripley is going to win it because you're going to have to take Charlotte off TV if they haven't filmed it yet, you know? So,
yep.
I can't in full confidence say it's going to be Charlotte because I just don't know whether or not they filmed this thing yet. So I'm going to go ahead and look. I know you've done it with – I know you think she's going to be counting the ring lights, but I'm going to go ahead and cut and say they don't see much in Rhea Ripley anyway, and I'm going to go ahead and say Asuka's going to win just for the simple fact that I don't see much in Rhea Ripley.
I mean, I hope you're right, but the WWE is one of those people who they – when you start to cycle somebody down, they almost never cycle them right back up. And Asuka's starting to be cycled down, unfortunately. So I hope you're right, but I got a feeling that that's the only reason they even added Asuka to this match in the first place. Todd, what's your thoughts? Who wins this?
I'm going to go with Charlotte Flair.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's possible, too. It's interesting. Because this is very interesting, because I'm going to go with Rhea Ripley to retain it, and I think that means that for maybe the first time ever, all three of us totally have a different pick. So it'll be interesting tomorrow to see how that plays out. I don't even think this is going to be that. You know, with the outstanding athleticism of all three of these women, I bet you this isn't the match it could be. I just don't know why. I just get that feeling. Rhea Ripley looks like somebody who's trying so hard not to make a mistake because this is her big break that she's not being herself. And Asuka, you know, she's a professional. She's going to do what she does, and Charlotte too, but we'll see. We'll see. So let's go to the men's three-way. Bobby Lashley versus Braun Strowman versus Drew McIntyre. Once again, I don't know why Braun Strowman's in this match. If it's not just to count the ring lights, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. They obviously want some more of McIntyre and Lashley. Braun Strowman was scheduled to have a feud with Randy Orton, but Randy Orton nixed it and decided he wanted to do this thing with the RK-Bro instead. That was Randy Orton's own decision. His initial WrestleMania, post-WrestleMania plans was to feud with Braun Strowman, and he said he would rather work with Matt Riddle. This is not good for Braun Strowman. I mean, he didn't say, I don't want to work with Braun Strowman. He's this or that or the other thing. He didn't say that. But when you get a guy like Randy Orton who has the opportunity, we want you to work with Braun Strowman, and he says, I got a better idea, that doesn't help Braun Strowman. That means that Randy Orton doesn't really think there's much to gain with a feud with Braun Strowman. So, unfortunately, that doesn't speak well for Braun's worth in this company. And I don't know if you've heard, but Randy Orton tells a story where he didn't like Matt Riddle very much either. He said, "You usually when you're new and you come into a dressing room, you introduce yourself to everyone, even if they know who you are. You go over and you say, hello, I'm Matt Riddle, you know, whatever." He said, Matt Riddle did none of that. So I decided I would break the ice. And I came over and said, oh, there he is. And Riddle just looked up at me and didn't say anything. And I said to myself, I don't like this guy. And for a while he didn't. But apparently somewhere along the line they broke the ice and he said, no, I actually do like him and I want to work with him. So here we go. So Braun Strowman's odd man out. So he gets thrown into this three-way for the title, and my assumption is he's the guy who's going to get pinned. I don't know whether he's going to get now the question is, does he get pinned by McIntyre and McIntyre becomes the new champ, or does he get pinned by Lashley? Well, here's the problem with this match. If he gets pinned by McIntyre, McIntyre is not going to look like the legit champ, period, end of conversation. And you don't want that to happen with a face. If he gets pinned by Lashley, this is like the third or fourth time that Drew McIntyre has got screwed out of a title. But how many more times is he going to get screwed out before you just say, forget it, he's out of the title picture? Now, what I'm hearing is that Drew McIntyre is having going to have an upcoming big feud with Jinder Mahal, which speaks well of Jinder Mahal. because I had said they're probably not going to use Mahal much at all anyway, the way it's being planned. But if Drew McIntyre wants to step up and say, I do want to work with Jinder, the exact opposite of what Randy Orton did with Braun Strowman, that makes Jinder automatically a main eventer. So certainly if Drew McIntyre gives the thumbs up to this, he's helping Jinder Mahal, tremendously helping Jinder Mahal. And the truth of the matter is, I would be much more interested in Bobby Lashley retaining the belt to possibly get to Brock Lesnar down the road and having a Jinder Mahal feud where who interferes constantly? His henchmen. And maybe, just maybe, Sheamus ends up coming to his rescue. I'd much rather see that than Drew McIntyre win the belt. And I don't, because I don't know what you're going to do with Bobby Lashley. Unfortunately, when you look at people who really need the belt, Bobby Lashley's the number one guy. Think about it. Where has Bobby Lashley ever been that he was super interesting when he wasn't the champion? When he was over on Impact and he was the champion, he was interesting. But when he wasn't the champion, nothing. Well, over here, not much. Not much going on with Lashley until he won the belt. Then he's over. Lashley needs that belt. He's one of those wrestlers who needs a title to get over. Drew McIntyre does not. So as much as it's nice for Drew McIntyre to have a belt, and the story that goes with it is a great story of, you know, sticking with it and reinventing yourself and everything, McIntyre does not need that belt to be a top dog. He just doesn't. And Lashley does. So I think we're going to see Lashley pin Braun Strowman. I'm going to go with Bobby Lashley to win. What's your thoughts, Mike?
I'm going to go with Bobby Lashley to win as well. And here's something else to think about. You're talking about that feud, him working with Jinder Mahal. I'm talking about
McIntyre.
Yeah. Remember, and I've brought this up before. Now, this was before Heath Slater left, but they did one of those table for three things with Slater, Mahal, and McIntyre at one point, and they all said they wanted to get back together. Now, with Heath Slater being out of the company, yeah, that trio is not going to happen, but who's to say that at some point after a long protracted feud between these two guys that at some point Jinder and whatchacallit don't make up and they get back together as maybe a tag team or something, you know?
Well, you never know, and of course you never even know with Slater because he's injured right now or whatever, and I don't even know if he's under a long-term contract to Impact. I don't think so. He could come back. But the key thing is this. If Drew McIntyre works with Jinder Mahal, Jinder Mahal automatically becomes a main eventer. That's how important Drew McIntyre giving the thumbs up to this feud is. Because at this point, Drew McIntyre probably does have the swerve enough to say, no, I don't want to do that. It's not an important enough feud. I'd rather stay in the title picture and keep going with Lashley or maybe shift an effort to another top name or whatever. But if Drew McIntyre says, no, this is great, I'll work with him, then Jinder Mahal gets the rub, instantly gets the rub, and he's right back in the main event picture. So that'll be interesting to see. Todd, who do you think wins this one?
I'm going to go with Lashley to retain the WWE Championship.
Yeah, so we're all in agreement on this one. I think Lashley retains. Hey, you see, the WWE's in a no-lose situation. If they do think they can get Brock Lesnar back, they got a match that people are honestly interested in. And if they can't, that's okay, because there's still people that they could put up against Bobby Lashley who people would be interested in. So it's no lose if Bobby Lashley wins. If Drew McIntyre wins, you have a very select few people. You could put Jinder Mahal up against them and still feud for the belt. You certainly could do that. But do people really believe that Jinder is a championship-quality wrestler right now, especially if he's the first guy to feud with a guy who just won the belt? You don't want to be that person, usually. Usually if somebody just wins the belt at a pay-per-view and your very next feud is with so-and-so, so-and-so's got no chance because you're not taking the belt off them that quickly. So you don't want to be that guy that's the first feud up. You don't want to be Bayley, who's feuding with Bianca Belair now because, you know, you're not taking the belt off Bianca Belair, so you know it's hopeless. You'd rather be the second or third person to feud with them because they might be thinking about taking the belt off them by then. So I don't know if that works. I think the only thing that really works right now is for Bobby Lashley to retain. And that brings us to the main event. And there's so many ways this can go because this was so well written. Once again, when you have great writing and you have a million branches on a tree, it throws doubt into even the most ardent wrestling fan who says, well, logically, Cesaro can't win this. Seth Rollins waiting in the wings. You already know that that's going to be a main thing. There's no way they'll let Cesaro win it. But then you start to think to yourself, well, I don't know. There's some good stories to be told here. What happens if Jimmy Uso costs him the belt just to shut his mouth up? It could happen. What happens if he inadvertently costs him the belt? What happens if Jey Uso turns on Roman and says, my brother's right? There's so many things that can happen that I'm not 100% sure. Maybe Cesaro wins and he only wins till the next pay-per-view and Roman wins it back or whatever. Who knows? That's what good wrestling writing does, folks. That's why, and I know there's people out there saying he's not winning. Yeah, but you don't know that. See, you can convince yourself of that, but you don't know for 100% sure, like we do certain times. We know Bayley's not winning. If she does, I'll have a heart attack. Because I can't believe you'd take that belt off Bianca Belair that quickly with a person who's not even over. But think about it. There's a great story to be told if Jimmy Uso costs him this title. Because Roman could say to Jay then, you see what your brother did? He was jealous. He couldn't accept the fact that we were rolling. And he turned on his own family. If he turned on me, he'd turn on you. Are you going to trust this guy? That's a compelling story to tell. Or you could have Jey Uso turn and say, my brother was right. You treated me like a bitch. I'm tired of being treated like a bitch. We can go do stuff on our own and we can provide for the family. We don't need you. That's a compelling story to tell. Or all three of them could combine. Jimmy Uso could say, hey, you know what? I thought about it last week and you're right. I hate Cesaro and I helped Roman win. And because I'd rather see my family, even though I'm not a big Roman fan right now, I'd rather see my family have the belt than Cesaro. That's a compelling story to tell. You've got a lot of ways you can go with this. Hell, you could have Shinsuke Nakamura come down and cost Cesaro the belt. And you got a compelling story to tell. You have a lot of branches on a tree right now. And that's such a good place to be in. If you're a wrestling company, that's what you want. If you're involved in an angle, you want fans to say, I could speculate 9 different things to happen and all 9 of them would be good stories. That's the beauty of a great wrestling angle. And that's what you've got here. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen. If I had a gun to my head, I would say Roman probably retains for the following reasons. Cesaro is one of my favorite wrestlers, but he is just not the guy to take that mic and sell a fight. I'm sorry, he's not. That's why I had Daniel Bryan with him for a while. Try to give him as little to say as possible. He just doesn't seem to be able to do it. Possible. Because it could further this Uso storyline in many different ways. And Cesaro has certainly earned it, and it would be a very popular decision with the fans. So it's possible that the WWE will do it. It's very possible. Or you could be setting up Cesaro's next feud with Shinsuke, who's out there being jealous, to set up a King of the Ring thing where Cesaro's going to be involved in that too. There's so much you could do with this that this is the one I'm the most looking forward to because I can't say for sure who's going to win. I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably Roman somehow retains this. But I'm not overly confident that that'll happen. It's very possible that Cesaro takes this for a short time. It would be a really popular decision. The only reason I'm saying that I don't think Cesaro will is because of what they did with Seth Rollins. That clearly made me think that they think the money is Seth Rollins versus Roman Reigns. And they clearly think that he's going to come back as a face, which is probably true when Becky Lynch sticks her nose back in. And if that's the case, you've got a compelling story, don't you? Because you've got Roman Reigns saying, well, I do what I do for my family. Well, Seth Rollins now has a family. And Seth Rollins was the only person who smack-talked Roman Reigns, and Reigns sort of accepted it. Reigns didn't say, don't talk to me that way. I'm the head of the table. Reigns was like, no, I'll take care of it. So there's still like that modicum of respect there. There's a big story to be told with Seth Rollins, and I think that's why Cesaro won't win, Mike, but it's very possible he might.
It's very possible that he might, and frankly, I mean, look, think about it this way. Seth Rollins could come in there and cost Roman Reigns the title somehow.
Yeah,
you know?
Could do that,
I mean,
too.
Another way this thing could go is it's not Jimmy Uso or Jey Uso, but I brought it up before. Naomi could somehow factor into this.
There's a million different branches on the tree. That's what I mean. You just don't know. I mean, you could have it any way you wanted. You could say Jimmy Uso purposely costs Cesaro the belt and acquiesces that, yeah, I should be a part of this. Okay. That's acceptable. Jimmy Uso tries to prevent his brother Jay from interfering and inadvertently hits Cesaro, and Roman Reigns wins, and he's got to deal with the fact that I helped Roman. That's possible. Jay Uso inadvertently costs Roman the belt and really gets reamed out and says, I've had enough of this, and joins Jimmy with, I'm out of this thing. Or Jimmy Uso really does. Or Jay Uso really does help Roman win, and Jimmy gets in his face and says, you see, you're fighting his battles. You have the possibility of Shinsuke Nakamura coming down. You have the possibility of Seth Rollins coming down. You could make the argument that Mike's making that you could have Naomi show up. And you know, if Jimmy and Jay start getting into a fight and Roman is a little distracted by the fact that they're actually arguing with each other or fighting and there's a big family problem outside the ring, that could cause Cesaro to win. You don't know. There's a lot of compelling stories you could tell. No matter who wins and no matter what happens, there's a lot of compelling stories you could tell. And that's when you know you have a great wrestling angle, when you're not really sure which direction it could go, because you could point to 10 or 12 different directions, all acceptable, all interesting, and all that makes you say, okay, well, let's see what happens next. So now you just got to say, which one do they favor? Now, with the WWE, they could just have Roman win clean, no interference, and then you're saying to yourself, why did you waste all these opportunities to tell these stories? They could do it. Or they could have Cesaro win clean. You still wasted the opportunity to tell stories. But nonetheless, this is the match that you have the most branches on the tree, the most directions it can go and still be a successful angle. So that's why I've applauded this wrestling angle from the day it happened, because I saw that every week you're putting a few new branches on that tree. And remember, a good wrestling angle also calls into effect things that happened previously. In other words, we look at Jey Uso's character, and it would be very easy for them to write Jey Uso as a brainwashed dude who just thinks Roman is his idol and he don't care what his brother says. But we know that's not true. Because when Edge was talking to him, it was making sense to him. You could see in his face, he was saying, Edge is making sense. And then he said, no, I don't want you to make sense. And he just kind of snapped out of it and said, no, you're wrong. But deep down inside, you knew as a fan, Jay knows that Edge wasn't wrong. Some of the things he said was right. That's the beauty of this. We can recall all these things and say, I don't know where Jay stands. He seems loyal to Roman Reigns, but he loves his brother. We know that because he literally tapped out because of his brother, which they brought to your attention with Jimmy Uso saying you wouldn't tap out until I was in danger, and then you did. So who is he more loyal to? This is a compelling story, one of the best the WWE's ever done. And you better put your best writers on it, because I'm telling you, you have gold if you want to stretch this out and really play with it. You have gold. You have what in the television industry they'd say is a season's worth of material, with the payoff being what will Jay do or what will Jimmy do? Which way will the wind blow? And you don't give that away right away. You give that away at the end of the season. That's your big moment. And everything, the whole season leads up to that moment. That's what I want out of this. I don't want you to stretch it out for a year, but at least to your next biggest pay-per-view, which would be SummerSlam or whatever, stretch it. Because this is the big deal. This is the one everybody's tuning in to see. But I think Roman without the belt would be weaker. The only way you could convince me, if I'm at a writer's meeting and they say, let's take the belt off Roman, give it briefly to Cesaro, have Roman blame either Jay or Jimmy for the loss and have this be a big deal, I'd say, okay, we can do that as long as we have an end game. What's the end game? That Roman gets it back and whichever Uso costs him the belt helps him get it back? Or what's the end game? And if the end game is worth it, then yes. But if the end game isn't worth it, then we're hurting Roman too much, because Roman being the champion is important, because that's how he keeps calling himself the head of the table. So if we're going to take that away from him, it has to be for a damn good reason. A huge, you know, storyline that's going to be compelling and wonderful and drive us forward. Anything short of that, it's not good enough. It's not a good enough reason to take it away. You'll do more damage to the character. So, I don't know, Mike. It's a tough one. I predict Roman, but I don't know how. But I think somehow Roman hangs on to it. What's your thought?
I don't know how either, but, and here's something else to think about. Correct me if I'm wrong, Marcus. Wasn't Cesaro a Heyman guy at one time?
Yes. Yes.
So, there's another possible brand. What if Paul Heyman comes out and costs Roman Reigns the belt?
I mean, is it remotely possible? It is, because he was a Paul Heyman guy. The only reason they probably won't do that, Mike, is because it would inadvertently turn Roman face, I think. Because then the whole thing would be, we told you not to associate with Paul. You did anyway, you got snake bit, and now we're here to pick you up. Your family's here to pick you up, the same family you shit on and said you were the head of and you were the big boss. We're the ones picking you up. That would probably turn him face, and I don't think they want to turn him face right now. Would it be a great idea? It kind of would be in a way, because Cesaro needs that mouthpiece a hell of a lot more than Roman Reigns needs it. So in some ways, it would definitely be a viable choice. But I think right now they want Roman to be that top heel. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And right now he's really doing good at that top heel. And if Paul turns on him, he's going to be the face. So I'd say that's a long shot, but still, it's a branch on a tree. And once again, that's the beauty of a great wrestling angle. Todd, what's your thoughts? Who wins this?
I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with Roman Reigns to retain the WWE Universal Championship.
You know, Roman probably is the obvious choice, but there's so many ways you can get there. That's the beauty of it. And unfortunately, well, I should say fortunately, really, in some ways, I think it's not going to happen, because they've built Cesaro up so big that I think they're afraid that if he loses again, this is it. His big chance, this is his only solo title shot he's ever had. And if he loses it, he's right back to Palookaville. You know what I mean? It's almost like this is his moment. They've done such a good job. I criticize the WWE all the time for lunkheaded, stupid things. But in this particular storyline, they have committed no fouls. Because I'm telling you right now, it wouldn't be that hard for me to be convinced that they're going to push Cesaro. Kept saying this is his only title shot he's ever had in his whole career here in WWE. It's Cesaro's time. It's this, it's that. And you're like, man, you've almost built him up to the point he can't lose. If he loses now, he's a palooka again. How can you let that happen? So you could very easily convince me he's going to win. But at the same time, I look at Roman and say, you can't take the belt away from him because that's what makes him the head of the table and stuff. And you still got this unfinished storyline with the Usos. So this can't be his time. I'm really conflicted. They've done a brilliant job of this. A brilliant job. Give credit where credit is due. Whoever is running this angle, and I don't know who it is for sure, but I'm going to tell you that I'm pretty sure that Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman probably got their heads in this. They're doing a great job. Whoever it happens to be who's coming up with this stuff. And from what I'm hearing, the Usos are doing a lot of their own things in Roman, and Paul's behind some of it too. This just goes to show you, sometimes you need to listen to your talent. They know what they can do. They know what they need to do to get over. And this has been nothing short of the best angle I've seen in WWE in a long time. So I'm really looking forward to this. Because no matter what they do, I'm going to say, that's the branch they decided to take. Okay, that's the beauty of this. Very much looking forward to this. Now, I've been asked to talk a little bit about the Aleister Black thing and what I think of it. Well, and I don't know what to think of it yet because I haven't seen him in the ring and I haven't seen what they're going to do. If they're going to do this, they got to stop the intro where he springs up from the whatever. You can't do that anymore, okay? His entrance has got to change. They're trying to do a very cerebral character with him now instead of just this kickboxing, semi-violent, short-tempered guy. They're trying to do a much more cerebral glance at this. It could work, but here's the reason I'm skeptical about anything with Aleister Black, because Vince McMahon has said I don't see any money in him. And when Vince McMahon says that, Vince McMahon doesn't normally change his mind. The fans would have to change it. If we get fans back in time and everyone does go crazy over whatever they got planned for Aleister Black, Vince McMahon very well might say, okay, go with the flow. If it's making money, it's making money. But I don't see it. I think it's going to be an interesting angle, but I don't think it's going to bring him to like world class, you know, I'm the top contender for major title type thing. I don't think so. Now, this is interesting. Jerry had said to me, he's texting me. Jerry says to me, you don't think Alexa Bliss is going to interfere in this three-way? Yeah, you know, you might be right. You might be right. Alexa Bliss could very well have a hand to play on who wins this, the women's title. Very well could, because she was out there, and she was saying, you know, I'm out here to watch a certain person. Charlotte Flair was there. Asuka was there. Could be Rhea Ripley. We don't know. That's a very good point, Jerry. I don't know. That Alexa Bliss isn't in this pay-per-view, so yeah, could she come out and do something? Yes. Yes, she could. And I didn't really even think about it, to be honest with you. Maybe that's who Charlotte Flair's next feud is with if she doesn't win. Maybe that's who Asuka's next feud is with if she doesn't win. Maybe that's the excuse they'll give Asuka. Somehow she put some kind of voodoo thing on Asuka, and that's why Asuka lost. I hope they don't, because I think it weakens the women's division if you're going to do this voodoo curse type thing. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it because I really, really like Alexa Bliss, and I think she does an excellent job as this character. But I'm not convinced that doing this, you know, Papa Shango type thing is going to help the women's division too much, Mike.
I don't think it is either, but we'll see. Well, they're going to have to finesse this. And right now, they finessed it all right, but they tend to not be able to do finesse, though, with certain things, you know. And they haven't been able to do finesse for a long time. It's just trying to beat you over the head with stuff, you know. And that's the thing.
Yes.
At one point, WWE was good at finessing things. You know, not anymore.
No, lately the WWE is the equivalent of putting a thumbtack in with a sledgehammer. I mean, that's just what they do. And you're right. That is a major problem, too. With the right finesse, this could work. But I don't see that. I see them just trying to do something and say, oh, wasn't that a big shock? Wasn't that a big surprise? It's almost like that's what they try to do. Even if it's at the detriment of their own storylines or angles, I wish they wouldn't. I wish they wouldn't. And, you know, we've discussed this on the show before, but in the age of soap operas, sometimes it took a year for a storyline to play out. And they were on every single day, 5 days a week. And you'd say, God, it moves so slow. One little thing every day. But you know what? You kept your viewers, didn't you? You kept them entertained enough to say, I'm waiting. I mean, I have sisters who were addicted to soap operas who would literally say, I can't go somewhere because this could be the day on this show where so-and-so gets what's coming to her or finds out her husband's cheating on her or gets cured of her disease or whatever the hell it is. Today's probably the day. And it would never be that day. It would always be, oh, maybe it's tomorrow. Oh, maybe it's the next day. Maybe it's next week. And you just keep watching and watching and watching and watching. And the ratings for them things were through the roof because they had really good writers. And they knew how to tell a story. And they said, you tell it one little bit at a time. And when something is working, when someone's interested, you keep waving that, dangling that apple in front of their face and just move it and move it and move it and move it, and they'll follow you. That's what good writers do. They tell the story very slowly, very carefully, and they keep the audience in suspense. And they keep that audience thinking that the very next show, that's going to be the important one. Dangle that carrot and keep it moving, keep it moving, keep it moving. Every show is going to be V1. And then eventually it is. WWE used to be very good at that. Mike is very correct about that. Nowadays, Mike, they're the sledgehammer in the tack.
Right. And think about this. Your soap opera thing is very apt because think about it. You look at some of these soap operas, Days of Our Lives, As the World Turns, and all that stuff. It wasn't just the one storyline, the main storyline, that they would stretch out for a year. You would probably have, in Days of Our Lives, and in any given year, you'd probably have not just the main storyline, but maybe one, maybe two side storylines that, oh, this is going on here. But this over here is interesting as well, and this third thing is also interesting. That takes talent to run three storylines and keep people interested in those three storylines for an extended period of time. I mean, there was a time when...
Mike, let me interject this. Now, you know what the reason the writers did that? Writers will do that because they say, this is my main storyline, and I'm going to dangle that carrot for a really long time. But I don't want fans to desert the show saying, well, I'm tired of waiting for the wrap-up of this. So I'll introduce two other or three other storylines, and I will wrap them up. I'll wrap them up a little shorter So the fans are seeing wrap-ups of some storylines while they're waiting for the biggie. That way they say, oh, I did see that at least. That was good. And you know, the next one might wrap up in a couple of days or tomorrow or the next day or the next day. And that way you could keep the main one going. In other words, if you just said, I'm going to keep this main storyline going a year, some fans might jump ship and say, well, this is just too long. But if you have five storylines with the main one going to last a year, but you're wrapping the other ones up, one in 6 weeks, one in 12 weeks, one in 20 weeks, they're constantly getting some wrap-ups. They're getting some payoff. So that's what keeps them tuning in every single week, Mike, or every single day, as the case may be.
That's right. And think about it. There was a time in the WWE when you would have you would have the main storyline, let's say, with DX. Then you'd have a side storyline with Triple H or Shawn Michaels or Kevin Nash or whomever with somebody else, or even China to some extent, you know. So you would have that main storyline with DX, but you would, and that storyline may have lasted 6 months, a year, but the storyline between, let's say, Stone Cold and Shawn Michaels, that one only will last four, five, 6 months. You see?
Right. You're constantly having things ending and new things beginning. In other words, you say my main one's going to last a year. The secondary one's only going to last 5 months, but then we're going to introduce another one right away that captures somebody's attention as a secondary plot line. These are the ways good writers think. And that's why it's very important to have really good writers. You've got something really good with Roman Reigns and the Usos and everything. Now, I would love to see another compelling one, because this Intercontinental thing, the U.S. belt, rather, this whatever, both on both brands, U.S. belt, Intercontinental, means nothing at this stage. No one's really caring about where it's going. You could have major storyline with that. Major. You're trying to do a major storyline in the women's division. It's not working. You need to start getting the same compelling storylines, but quicker payoffs. So you say my main one's going to float for a long time because that's what our bread and butter is. But our side dishes, we're going to wrap them up a little bit quicker. We're going to allow those to breathe a little bit. Todd, what's the one you're most looking forward to tonight?
I'm looking forward to the Universal Championship match.
Okay. Is there one?
Yep.
I'm 100% sure there is one. I don't think there is one. That's next week on SmackDown. What's the one you're looking forward to the most tonight?
It'd be easy for me to say, the Universal title match, but I'm going to go with the women's title match just for the simple fact of I want to see if Alexa Bliss does have something to do in that match.
Right. Well, that's right. I thought Todd said Intercontinental. He said Universal. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Universal one too, Todd. That's the one. I mean, look, again, what does that tell you? I know what it tells me. It tells me that's your main event, man. That's your stars. That's the ones people are tuning in to see. You need to understand what's going on in WWE, and you need to do this with both shows, and you need to have your side dishes along with your main food. Enjoy it tonight. We'll be back here at noon to run down what happened.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.